Right, tonight's talk on Priti Patel and immigration. So over to Tim.
Yeah, hello everyone. So immigration, you might have seen Priti Patel doing the news rounds a couple of weeks ago, and that's because the bill was going through Parliament again to change some of the immigration rules. So what I thought I'd do is just put that in context, talk about what's proposed, as far as we know at least, for the new rules. And then people might have questions, might have things they want to discuss. And I'm quite happy to try and answer any questions, or some other people might be able to answer questions better than I can. And then if we get a chance, I've just got a discussion question myself that I thought we could perhaps kick around. So I'll talk for a few minutes anyway. So Priti Patel, as I say, was on TV a lot a couple of weeks ago because the immigration bill was going through the House of Commons. So that was its second reading. It kicked off under Theresa May in 2018, but because she didn't have a majority, it didn't get very far. So they just withdrew it, and now they've reintroduced it again. So a lot of people are very critical of the timing of that, given that we're relying on all these essential workers, many of whom are foreign nationals. So she got a lot of flack for it, especially in the context of NHS workers, again, a lot of foreign nationals in the NHS. But anyway, the government are still determined to push through with it. It's basically part of the Brexit process, because the bill itself, as tabled at the moment, is mainly to get rid of free movement. So that's what's happening. And so the schedule for that is that will happen by 1st of January next year, 2021. So that's the bill. I had its second reading a couple of weeks ago, and then it should be complete probably in the autumn, I think, if it actually gets passed. But with the current Tory majority, then it potentially will go through, unless a lot of the Tories desert them. And there are a lot of Tories that are critical of these proposals, as well as Labour. So that's the bill. I'll talk about a bit more about what the proposals are in the bill, and then what the system might look like when it goes through by the end of the year. But I thought I'd just run some basic statistics about immigration so we get an idea. And these are from the ONS, Office of National Statistics, and they're taken from the Labour survey. This should be reasonably robust. So, and the latest statistics are 2019. So, for example, net migration to the UK from the EU in 2015 was 219,000, and last year that dropped to 49,000. So that's not really surprising, because you know, as the Brexit thing rolled along, a lot of people were deciding either not to come or to go back. And that's what's happened. And particularly a lot of Polish people, a lot of other old Eastern European countries, Baltic countries, a lot of those people have gone back. So that's reduced the net EU migration from over 200,000 to just under 50,000 last year. With the non-EU migration, that's been going up for some time. So since 2013, it's been going up. Net migration reached in 2019 its highest level ever. So it's 282,000. So that's non-EU net migration. Net migration figures the difference between who comes in and who goes out, basically. So that's the headline figure that the government is trying to seize on to say that they must cut immigration and so on and so on. So that's what Priti Patel was concerned about when she was having her interview in the last couple of weeks. So the idea is to cut net migration has been for several years. That hasn't been achieved, and that's been blamed on the fact that within the European Union, there's free movement, and so the UK hasn't had control over its immigration policy. So currently, when we look at ignoring the current COVID situation, there are nearly 30 million UK nationals working in the UK, and there are about 2.5 million EU nationals other than the UK in addition, and then about 1.3 non-EU nationals. So we've got a working population of about 34 million, and of those, EU nationals 2.3 million, non-EU nationals 1.3, so about 3.6 million are foreign nationals altogether. And of course, we've got a lot in the NHS. NHS is the biggest organisation in the world, 1.28 million staff at the moment, with 100,000 vacancies, and around 170,000 of that 1.28 million staff are foreign nationals. Most of those are European foreign nationals, but there's a large chunk of them that are non-EU nationals as well. So that works out about one in seven staff of the NHS are foreign nationals of some sort. And the Black and Asian NHS workers have been in the news, and still are, because they're disproportionately affected with the virus. And there are 64,000 of those in the NHS working in different different roles. And so there have been some recent changes, tweaking with NHS workers, foreign nationals. So some of them on indefinite leave to remain. And if they happen, unfortunately, to drop dead of COVID, the government's said that their family members will get residence status in the UK. And they've also abolished the charges for foreign nationals, for NHS workers. And they've removed the fee, I think, for the renewal of the visa. They've made some small concessions to NHS workers, which obviously is politically popular. So that's the sort of overview. Current immigration controls in the UK are just split in two ways, really. One is the EU, is free movement. A bit beyond the EU, actually, because it's the economic, European Economic Area. So it's the EU27 and plus Iceland, Norway and Switzerland, who have got agreements with the EU for free movement. So effectively, oh, and Liechtenstein as well, so 31 countries. So within that area, the European Economic Area, there's free movement of labour and free movement for travel of any kind, really. So that's where we are. Non-EU foreign nationals are subject to what is now being proposed for everyone, which is a points-based system. And that's sort of loosely based, or being proposed to be loosely based, on the Australian system. So what's happening now with non-EU nationals is going to apply to all foreign nationals. So the bill that came up for the second reading last week or the week before last, the Immigration and Social Security Coordination Bill, is a standard type of bill that's arisen, that's become commonplace. Become the most common way of dealing with legislation. And criticism that's fundamentally undemocratic. What it is, it's an enabling bill. It's a framework bill. So when you read the bill, there's nothing in it. There's nothing in it. But what it does do is it gives powers to the Secretary of State to make statutory, to make regulations with statutory instruments. And so when you look at the bill, there's not much on it. So when people report on the bill, they have to look at other sources, and then it all gets sort of conflated. There isn't much in the bill, and the government don't intend to bring the detail of the bill to Parliament. They're going to bring some more details, but in the end, it will be Priti Patel that will shape the detail to a statutory instrument. And the statutory instruments don't go through Parliament in the same manner as bills. And that's been since Tony Blair. Tony Blair started that system or expanded it. And so it's just an enabling bill. So it doesn't say much. All it says is, it's just a few pages, and it says that any EU law in relation to immigration is subordinate to UK law. So basically it says that where any of those things are inconsistent, then UK law trumps EU law for immigration. It stops any of the devolved authorities, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, from making their own law or statutory instruments in this area. So it precludes any devolution powers that Westminster have complete control. And then it simply ends free movement in accordance with the Brexit arrangements. So there'll be no more free movement of labour as there is within the European Union. So that's basically what it says. So the bill doesn't amount to much. That'll go currently in the committee stage. It will then go to the House of Lords, and then it'll come back. And in the meantime, there'll be various sort of select committees, and the Migration Advisory Committee will look at it and so on. So it'll be what they call scrutinised through that process, to the extent that anything is ever scrutinised. The point system comes is that this Migration Advisory Committee reported in January, and they said, we should have a point system not dissimilar to the non-EU nationals that we currently deal with, but they referenced Australia because Australia was seen as a sort of success story. So this committee has suggested various parameters to this point system, and the government have said that they'll view these favourably, but they haven't committed to them yet because obviously they need to have an eye on the politics, especially with the implications of the NHS, foreign nationals, and well, not just the NHS, I mean all these other workers, delivery drivers, shop workers, agricultural workers, many of whom are foreign nationals. So they're keeping their options open. But as much as the point system has been recommended, this is what it says, basically. There's going to be a skilled worker provision, and the points will accrue according to certain criteria. So, for example, if you're trying to come into the UK under this new system, you'll have to have a job offer. You'll have to have a sponsoring employer. Sponsoring employers are approved employers that can make the job offers to foreign nationals. And you must be able to speak English to a reasonable standard. So if you've got those three things in place, then potentially, well, you can apply, and you need to accrue under this scheme, if it goes through, 70 points. So if you've got those three things, you've got 50 points, basically. So if you've got a job offer, a sponsoring employer, and you've got a level of English, then you've got 50 points. The other criteria that you would need to apply is a minimum salary offer. And this committee has advised 25,600 around. So there's a bit of dispensation and you can trade off points. So some people between 20,000 and 25,000 might get through, but not very many. But basically, unless you're earning 25,600, you're not going to be able to apply anyone. So that gives you 50 points. Job offer over 25,600 salary, English, and the sponsoring employer, improved employer. And then you've got to mop up another 20 points, you know, somehow, basically. And you can get those points in different ways, but probably it's going to be, if you're in a shortage occupation like engineering or doctors or you know other categories of that kind, usually again professional people, then if you're in a shortage occupation, the list of those occupations that's changed, you know, from time to time, you can get the 20 points. So you'd be up to 70 then. If you're not in a shortage occupation, then you're going to have to be fairly highly qualified. So if you've got a PhD, for example, it only gives you 10 points. So you'd only hit 60 with a PhD. The only way you can get a 20 points for a PhD is if it's in science, technology, engineering, or maths. So it's quite a high bar. And so when you look at the sort of headline of that proposal, it looks very severe. But when you look at the detail, exemptions and the other bits and pieces, you can see how this can be very malleable according to what politics is. Because a lot of employers are opposed to this because they can lose a lot of their foreign national workers. So that looks very, you know, very difficult. So some of the other things that are happening that makes it easier, for example, well, there's a global talent scheme that exists at the moment, and so that makes it easier for people like, you know, researchers, other professional groups, maths people, teachers, and so on. That makes it easier for them to get in. There's options for students to get in, provided they've got the financial means and offer a course and speak English, and they would have temporary access to the labour market afterwards. Then you've got specialist occupations, and these can be changed. So again, you know, you can add to the shortage groups, you can add to the specialist occupations, and so on. So there's lots of flexibility within the scheme, which gives the government, or you know, Secretary of State, quite a lot of leeway. But ostensibly, there's nothing for lower skilled workers, which again, as a headline, looks very severe, doesn't it? And sort of panders to the, you know, we must cut immigration, too many foreign nationals coming in, so on. But again, when you look at the detail of it, it's going to be very flexible. And some of the big employers will not accept that they're not going to have foreign national low-skilled workers. So I think it's going to be watered down. So, for example, you may have seen the Pick for Britain campaign that Prince Charles is fronting. So that's saying we need 80,000 workers to pick the crops from now until the autumn. And most of those would have been foreign nationals. Most of them would have been poor East European countries in the EU. And so under this new scheme, and it doesn't apply until next year if it comes in, but under this new scheme, there's a provision for seasonal workers to be able to come in for 6 months of a year without a visa. And the government can set the levels for that, whatever they want. They said it used to be quite low, but then they had all sorts of dispensations. But now, because a lot of them are EU workers and they're not going to be able to come in on a free movement, they're increasing those numbers. So they knocked it up to 10,000. Recently, they were proposing to take it up further, but they don't need to do that until next year. This year, it's still coming on the free movement. And some of those workers are coming in, apparently. I was quite surprised to see on the news that a lot of the East Europeans are still flying in. And they've been given dispensation as essential workers, so they don't have to go through the quarantine system. So even with low-skilled workers, there's going to be a lot of sort of fudging around to allow that process to go on. So I think it's very much politics really, and I don't think the immigration system is going to be as tight as they're proposing, and they're probably not going to see net migration go down that much, barring obviously the COVID crisis. Yeah, so that's that. Labour Party, I mean, apart from complaining about Priti Patel's announcements recently in the context of the NHS and COVID, as far as I know, I've got no new immigration policy. And so the last statement they made was in the manifesto in December 2019 for the election. And that didn't really say anything. So there was never a clear policy from Labour as an alternative. So they said they were going to end free movement, but not completely. And it was never really developed, as far as I know, further than that. So that's the outline of the people have got questions.